It's time for Twig. This week in Google, Jeff Jarvis is here. Stacey Higginbotham is here. I'm here. We're going to talk about Android 9 Pi. We'll also talk about the Google Pixel 3 XL and leaked images. What is Google going to do about China and the banning of InfoWars? It's all coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twig.
This is Twig. This Week in Google, episode 468, recorded Wednesday, August 8th, 2018. Extra stolen privacy. This Week in Google is brought to you by WordPress. Reach more customers when you build your business website on WordPress.com. Plans start at just $4 a month, and you can get 15% off any new plan at WordPress.com/twig. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans, introducing Rate Shield Approval. If you're in the market to buy a home, Rate Shield Approval locks up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. It's a real game changer. Learn more and get started at RocketMortgage.com/twig. It's time for Twig this week in Google. I'm back. Thank you, Jason Howell, for filling in for me. He's back, Jeff Jarvis, from, there's a long story, clickbait.org. He's buzzmachine.com is his blog, and, of course, he's a town knight, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I don't put that up.
Professor of journalism at the City University of New York. Also with us from Seattle, Stacey Higginbotham. Stacey on IoT.com. She'll be going back to Austin next week.
Yep.
To the beautiful sunny climb. So, Jet, we were just talking before the show, and I was not here last week, so I was not present for the attempt to get the Lenovo smart display working. However, I understand it is now working, Jeff.
Well, yes and no. We tried to get a call going, and we couldn't do it. But
using Duo.
Kevin Tofel said I hadn't done something yet.
Yeah, you could do it with Duo.
But I also have four phones around me, so I don't really need it to call.
Right.
No, it's a nice. So it is nice to have a, what do we call it? An always on portal to your home is a good way to think about it. So I actually used similar functionality on the Amazon Echo while I was gone, just to check in on my guy house sitting.
Yeah.
And my dog.
Yeah.
I use it when I'm traveling to talk to my daughter, and to show her things. So again, I think there's value to that.
No, and I feels like it feels first of all unfinished. We have one for review, and Jason Howell will give us a full review at some point in the future on all about Android and the new screensavers. But we played with it on the new screensavers on Saturday, and it feels unfinished. I mean, you're supposed to. I kind of think of it as a kitchen TV, right? Adjunct, mm-hmm. But Netflix doesn't work yet. You know, it's like it feels like it's an unfinished product, but that's an easy thing to fix in time.
Did you guys not connect it? Cause Kevin got Netflix working on his.
He did. We were told it wasn't working yet. In fact, a lot of what we got from it.
Play Netflix.
I can't do that yet.
Sorry. I can't show what's on Netflix.
Okay. Huh? Did you connect your Netflix account?
Sorry.
Oh, you're listening audiobook. To Netflix now.
No, no, that was an audiobook. Why that came on, I don't know.
These devices
I did hook up Netflix, and it's not telling me I can do it.
Yeah, these devices are, okay. It is obvious, an exercise in frustration anyway. Mm-hmm. But
I think a lot of these get sold on what they can do, and then they don't always implement everything right away. I've noticed that in a lot of my connected devices, and I finally... Companies are getting better now about actually telling you what they do as opposed to what they one day will do.
Yeah.
But
yeah. And that's, I think that's a mistake because consumers get them. I remember, I'm old enough to remember the days of the VIC 20 computer so there was a lot of interest in home computing in the early mid 80s. And some of this was because Apple, you know, had an Apple computer and stuff, but they were all expensive. And so Commodore decided, well, we'll make a $200 home computer, the VIC-20. But it was so underpowered and so useless, it almost immediately ended up in people's closets. And I think it stymied home computing for some years because people said, oh, I tried that. Same thing, you know, we've seen that, you know, kind of over and over again where people, you know, try something and then decide, oh, that's not, it's, you know, this doesn't work. And so that's a risk with these home assistants.
It's a risk with all technology purchases.
The netbook killed PC sales for years because people bought, oh, $200 computer, and it was such crap. Mm-hmm. It killed PC sales for maybe 5 years.
Did people actually buy netbooks?
Well, that's exactly the point, is that they couldn't resist the price point.
You know? We're going to say the same thing about tablets. You know, there's been quite a swing there, right? So I reboxed my first iPad, and then everybody made fun of me properly because it took over the world, and now nobody buys tablets anymore.
I think that, you know, you could make the case that the people did buy tablets. They're just not buying more tablets. The one they got is fine. Android, yeah, on the Android side, tablets are a flop. No question.
I loved my 7, my Nexus 7. God, I loved that.
Why? So that's another question. Why did everybody stop making 7 and 8-inch tablets all of a sudden?
Yeah. Perfect size.
HTC? Didn't they just do it? No, Honor? Didn't they just do a 7-inch? Oh, that was a 7-inch phone. Never mind.
By the way, the answer to the question why people don't do 7 and 8-inch tablets anymore. The answer is 7 or 8-inch phones or 6-inch phones anyway. But I like this. I agree with you, Jeff. That was a really nice device. And the Pixel C, pretty much, no. We've been playing with for a little bit with the Acer Chromebook tablet. It's a non-starter. Or Ace, is it Asus? It's one of the Ace.
Because it's too low powered.
Yeah, and Chrome OS is not ready for a tablet.
No, it's not.
It's a keyboard OS.
Well, it's not just that. It's just that things like, you know, DRM stuff and other things don't run well.
We've got to get, Samsung has released its S4. They announced that last week. And I'll have to see if we can, no, that's the phone. I should say S4 Tab. that looks pretty good. That is an Android tablet, but it is a Android tablet with a lot of Samsung stuff. And it has a removable keyboard. This looks nice. Yeah, yeah. So, I guess we'll maybe get a copy.
What about the new smaller Windows
one? I like that. Microsoft in fact, one? I have that in the other. I should have brought that in. I have that in the other room.
The Surface Go.
Surface Go. I like it. It's a little underpowered, but it's kind of.
Is the keyboard? Did you
it's
the
usable,
keyboard
totally
it?
Usable
is it
keyboard. It's a little smaller.
It is. Oh,
yeah. Okay. You get used to it real quick. But I'm sorry, real quickly. But
is it an 8-inch or?
It is 10 inches. It's exactly the same size as an iPad. It's the same size and price as an iPad. It's really what it is aimed at is somebody who might buy an iPad, but maybe wants an operating system, a real operating system.
As opposed to Chrome OS, yes.
Or Chrome OS, yeah. Anyway, it's an interesting marketplace we live in. I almost feel like, and I look at Indiegogo and Kickstarter, and people are just throwing anything they can up against the wall and hoping that it'll stick, which on the one hand is good, but on the other hand, you get a lot of weird beasts. This is the Surface Go.
Oh.
Yeah. It's cute, isn't it?
Birdie.
Yeah. Birdie. It looks like an iPad.
It looks like an iPad. This is detachable.
Yeah.
It's like my...
has a pen.
Pixel C, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, I think if you... the problem... I'm not a huge Windows fan. I can use it. I can tolerate it, but I'm not a huge Windows fan. So if you like Windows, it's not a bad choice. It has the kickstand built in, and you know it's a good size for either a second computer or.
I love that you have the little tiny version of the big.
I know. Here's the biggest Surface. Here's the little Surface. You know, I didn't think about that, but they really go together, don't they?
Hi, Grandpa.
Oh, how you been? Everything going all right?
It's the end of Leo's week.
It's Puppet Time Theater. So the Pixel 3. I really like the Google Pixel 2 XL. A year in, the screen, there were a lot of complaints about it, but I think, you know, it's not the greatest OLED screen out there, but now...
I'm fully used to it. It used to flash on me, but doesn't anymore.
Yeah,
and now I have... Pi.
We have Pi. I am a little surprised to get Pi so early, but Pixel, a lot of the features won't really be fully cooked in the Pi.
It's funny how we used to practically wait outside for a new OS version. Now it's
They're not big changes anymore.
Pi seems to be kind of significant. There's a lot of the AI stuff built in where it's going to start anticipating what you need and allocating resources based on what you do.
Right. So that's the marketing hype. But do you find that that's the case?
I don't know. I find that Google is actually pretty good at predicting things and actually doing it in a way that's less creepy. So sometimes it'll just pop random stuff up for me and I'm like, oh, cool.
Is this like the Google Now used to be?
I think it's a little bit more running in the back end. I don't think it's stuff that you would necessarily notice.
Okay. I haven't had anything yet, but I only have had Pi for a couple of days.
Yeah, I haven't noticed anything.
Favorite thing is that the way they've changed the home button, but you know, we've seen this, you know, we saw this in the earlier versions. Now you can swipe between apps.
And of course, we've got to remind people if they've gotten it, that you don't get that automatically.
Yes, you have to. Is that the case even in the release version?
It is.
You have to. Is that right, Carson? Mm-hmm. You have to enable that. So you go to settings. You have to change how the home. I think that makes sense because it is a big change to the way the home button operates. And is it under accessibility? I bet you it is.
No. That's the problem. I can't. Every time I do it, I forget where it was.
Yeah. Where is
it's
it?
Under system, I think.
System. Let's
gesture
go down
control.
Here. Gestures. Yeah, that's it. So you want active. Nope, that's the squeeze.
Yeah,
that's silly. Squeezing is silly.
I love the squeeze.
I forgot that it even exists.
I finally took it off.
I squeeze it all the time.
I finally took it off.
Okay.
Swipe up to home button. Yes. Gestures.
Swipe up.
System.
On
gestures.
Home button.
Swipe up on home button.
And then, so now you can swipe up like this to get recents. Or my favorite feature, which isn't immediately obvious and isn't in fact given away by the name swipe up to home button, is you could swipe sideways. You could, and this is right out of iPhone 10. But I really like that feature. Use it all the time. My most common use for it, nobody knows this. I'm in a site and I'm trying to enter the password. So I swipe over to LastPass, copy it, and swipe back to the site. It's very convenient.
You learn something every time on Twig.
Wow.
Pi is here, baby.
How to turn your expensive Microsoft device into a puppet and how to swipe it.
Where do I turn that on? Again, I'm
systems,
in the settings menu, but systems.
We'll walk
there
you through it. System,
okay. Oh, I found
gestures,
it.
And then swipe up on home button on. Now, and it's funny, even in the illustration, they show that swiping up, but they don't show the swipe left. I don't know why that is.
Is that a swipe right?
Yeah, you're right. It's swipe right only. I thought maybe it was swipe left too, but it is only swipe right.
You know, I did just get it, and I don't know if everyone has this or I was belated, but Gmail just suggested to me probably 4 or 5 days ago to change my swipe settings in is it inbox? No, it's Gmail. And now it let me customize it so I can swipe left or right to delete things and archive or move things. Has this happened to you?
Yeah, I see that a lot. That's the files go feature, right? Or no?
Yeah, but mine has always been if I moved it one direction, it would archive. And I hate it because I hate archiving. So
you're talking about mail.
Custom-
oh, yeah. I'm sorry. It's not files go. It's the it's Gmail. Yeah.
Yeah, it's in Gmail. So I've been loving that. That has like made my mobile mail just like super manageable. So.
I don't use Gmail, but if I did, I would.
I was like, go for customization, you guys. It's awesome.
So what do you think? The notch, it's pretty clear now. We're getting close to the Pixel 3. And we now see production units. There was an unboxing by a Ukrainian tech blogger on his Telegram channel. And we don't know when this is going to come out. He shows that it will have Bluetooth. Well, are those Bluetooth? I don't think so. I saw a number of bloggers say it was Bluetooth. But look, see, there's a Type-C connector. So those are not Bluetooth earbuds in there. They do look like the Pixel Buds, but they're not.
It would make sense because people hate the fact that there are no Type-C
headphones
out there.
Well, and the last one they offered a Pixel Type-C headphones. And I think there's also a...
No, they didn't.
Well, what? That's a frustration.
This has been the bane of my existence for the longest time, and I had to finally pony up for Bluetooth.
They did offer, did they not, an adapter, though, that takes regular
headphones? Yeah, they had a Okay. They had a dollar, like a $9 dongle that sucked.
But I think the phone came with a dongle.
It came with it, but yeah. Mine broke, and right. Google actually and you lose me at least two more.
Dongles are to lose. Yeah,
I really hate Type C. I really hate losing the headphone jack. Let's put.
I hope it's ridiculous. I should bring it back.
Yeah, can we stop complaining so much about notches and actually complain about the loss of the headphone jack, which I feel is like much more mainstream.
It feels like gratuitous. Samsung's able to keep a headphone jack in a phone of the same size. It seems with just as many features. It seems gratuitous. And the fact that Apple did that in the notch and now Google's doing that in the notch, it just irks me. Why copy? Why? The notch, by the way, seems completely pointless, given that you've got a big lip anyway at the bottom. I don't know. Anyway, I can live with the notch. I live with it on the iPhone 10. Headphone jack, I agree with you, Jeff, is a much more serious omission.
Wait, no, that was
Stacy. I agree with you, Stacy, is a much more... I confuse you. Is a much
Stacey
more.
Stacy was cutting off my notch hatred.
I'm sorry. It's just
precluding like, it for her.
This is the unboxing, which I find to be the most frustrating thing I've ever seen because he's holding his camera with one hand and attempting with his left hand to unbox.
Use your mouth.
And by the way, the very first thing he does in the unboxing is take the phone and put it aside. Yeah. So now almost the entire length of this is devoted to him attempting to do with one hand to open paper. Dude, I know you're merely a Ukrainian blogger on Telegram, but come on. You're trying to drive us nuts. We've seen all this. I don't need to. He spends an inordinate amount of time on the SIM pin, the SIM poker. The whole thing is the worst unboxing ever. Where's the phone? I took it off. It's over on the left. I'm thrilled it has that. I'm thrilled.
Yeah. Oh, we get to see both sides of it. Oh,
yeah.
Ooh. Never seen the back.
Eventually, he's going to get to the earbuds. Oh, forget it. I give up. Worse, all this rustling. So this is a pre-release because somebody points out that the camera notification has the dog food. Camera icon has the dog food notification, which means it's a Google employee's device he's testing out. Uh-oh, somebody's in trouble.
Yeah.
But it's completely credible that this is what it is.
And when did the new phones come out, in October or September for Google?
Unknown. The last time they tried to do it before Apple came out with the iPhone.
They announced October 4 the last 2 years. Everybody thinks it's October 4.
Oh, okay.
They announced, but when they actually come out, I don't know.
Unknown. The fact that they pushed Android Pie out already kind of makes me think they're going to do this sooner.
I want a new Chromebook.
Chromebook.
I was like, I don't want a new phone yet.
I love mine. It's fine as it is. It's ridiculous. I don't need one. I could live another 2 years on it, but hey.
That's an interesting. I think you're the only one.
No, we have Elgin.
Elgin wants a new Chromebook too, huh?
Well, he would because he's trying to tell the world that he's the greater lover than I am, but he's wrong.
Oh, you two are going to fight.
Oh, yeah. Lord.
Fight over who loves Chromebook more. Pi, okay, let's talk about this AI. I mean, this is, you know, sometimes when I see AI, I start to just think, oh, man, that's like saying blockchain. Might as well say powered by blockchain. It's just, but maybe, I mean, Google is, you know, the leader,
Google's
I think.
Google's actually legit when it comes to AI. Yeah. I mean, they're not... They actually, and let's put it applied AI. So they actually do things. A lot of this stuff I don't think is actually available yet. So I know it's part of Pi, but some of the cooler stuff.
Later this year, yeah.
Slices, I think. And I'm kind of curious because doesn't Slices sound like, I always forget what they called those.
Android apps.
Same thing. Yes.
So
even if the app's not installed, it will show you
a slice of it.
Actually, Instant Apps was if the app was not installed. Slice may not do that. But what Slice does is it puts chunks of the app into Google Search. So if you type Lyft into Google Search, you'll see the app and it knows where you are.
And it'll put in other information for you too.
Right, and the ETA for a driver. So without launching the Lyft app, I think this makes a lot of sense. I like this.
It does, although it's bringing, I hate that they're doing all of this with, I mean, this says it's your apps. I hate that all of this is happening within the Android ecosystem as opposed to the broader web, because this ecosystem, what you're going to have is something different here versus the experience elsewhere. And these sort of things just drive me absolutely bonkers.
Well, I wonder if Slices will work with progressive web apps, in which case.
Oh, then they might be.
Yeah. So among other things, the AI will learn is adaptive battery. It'll notice which apps you use the most and prioritize the battery for them. Adaptive brightness, which learns what settings you prefer in different, what brightness settings you prefer in different locales, and then automatically does it. So you get to work, it'll turn it up. Go to bed, it'll turn it down. App actions predict what you'll want to do next based, this will be very interesting, based on your context, and display that action right on your phone. So this is a lot what app, like what Apple.
So yeah, so all it's giving me now is the audiobook I'm listening to.
So it's doing that where?
And Google News. So on that screen, it has the recently opened app, so you can't really see it because it's pointing out.
On the app screen, okay.
Well, right there, it has two things. One is the audiobook of the Reformation I'm listening to. Ooh, how fascinating. And
well, it was Martin Google Luther's 500th birthday.
It was last year.
Last year.
It was the 500th of the theses.
I bought a Luther biography that I started listening to that day.
Which one? Because there's one that I.
One that you like and one that you don't?
No, there's one that has like Sean Hannity recommendations.
No, this is definitely not Sean Hannity's Luther. God, I hope.
Eric Nonax.
Isn't that what Bill O'Reilly was doing for a while? Is I don't like the murder of Kennedy, the murder of. No, it is not that. It is. I hope it's the.
Eric Metaxas.
Yes, Metaxas. Is that the bad one?
Look at the blurbs. It's a very weird mix.
Really? That's a bad one? Because it was pretty good so far.
And somebody I know who my sister, I think the minister said.
Oh, the ministers don't like it.
Hugh Hewitt, Tucker Carlson, and the Washington Times all love it.
I guess I got.
Oh my God!
One.
You bought a conservative biography of Martin Luther.
Well, he was okay. So well, it's so far. It's been pretty good because one of the problems with Luther is that he is kind of canonized as the founder of the Protestant denomination, but he was a miserable anti-Semite. And that is so far in the book quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
It acknowledges his
the book that I will recommend highly, highly, highly is the one that is a joint biography.
I'll get a different one. Yeah.
Of,
although this one's been good so far.
Here.
I don't know why. Maybe other people like it besides Sean Hannity. Is that possible?
That's possible,
totally,
but he also
possible.
Wrote another book people would like. Hold on a second here. It's Fatal Discord. It's about Luther and Erasmus. It's surprising.
Oh, that I would like to read, actually. That sounds
interesting. It's really, really good. No, I don't want to download it. No.
Oh, okay. So Metaxas has written a lot of other books that... I understand why. They're religious books. But, you know, anybody's going to write about Luther is going to be, who's Bonhoeffer?
Oh, no. Victim of the Nazis.
Okay. He wrote a book about Bonhoeffer.
Bonhoeffer.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I don't know. So far, it sounds fine to me. He wrote a book about miracles, what they are. How they happen.
He wrote a book called The Forgotten Promise of American Liberty.
Yes, that one also. And If You Can Keep It, That's Forgotten Promise of American Liberty.
I'm going to get in trouble for having said this.
You poisoned me now.
Now you're going to try to look for the secret. Just read it and form your own opinion.
So far, it's been very good. My point was merely that I started reading it when Luther nailed the 95 theses on the Wittenberg Church door, and I'm only about a quarter of the way through it. So it's a long book.
It's pretty much believed that he didn't really do that, but that's okay.
Yeah, but that's what's been great about the Metaxas book so far, is there are a huge number of myths about Luther, which are all completely wrong.
So I visited that church in Berlin for no reason, Jeff?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, not in Berlin.
First of all, it's not in Berlin, so there's problem number one.
Yeah.
Right there.
Right, it wasn't in Berlin.
Well, it was his church, and it probably ended up on the door at some point, but it might have been mailed.
Oh, is it Bonhoeffer who said when they came for the blank, I...
No, that was Martin Niemöller.
That was Niemöller. Yeah, right.
Niemöller.
Wait, how did we get on here?
I don't know. I don't know. This show is making me crazy.
We were talking about...
Pixel 2, XL...
Your audiobook. Okay, wait. So here's the question, because when Google talks about delivering the apps via context, I'm curious which context it's getting. So it may be that you always listen to your audiobooks at home. So that might
be
why.
Yeah, no, because look at what's on my suggestions, which is pretty boneheaded. Gmail, which I don't use. Files Go, which I had opened when you mentioned it for the first time in a long time. Google Fi, well, it's a Fi phone. Inbox, another version of Gmail, which I don't use. And then I don't know what this is. I think that's the Hangouts notification.
Leo, for me, widget. That line is just recently used apps.
Oh, well, where's your line then? I'm sorry, I'm looking at the wrong line.
Then you go all the way up.
All the way up. And it's this thing.
Well, no, it's not doing it. Right below.
It's the same thing.
No.
Not that?
No.
This one?
No, there's another line here. You can't see because it's too dark.
I don't have a line.
So.
Wait a minute, here comes Karsten. With his line. All right, let's see. Karsten also has a pixel.
Oh, yeah, there you go, Karsten.
Kimmy, wife, and Zach. Those are like people you call. Why don't I have that line? Did I somehow
screw up? Does it have to remind
up?
You it's your wife?
Did I have to? Yes,
is that,
Kimmy,
is that
wife,
does for you?
As opposed to Kimmy, some other Kimmy, I'm not going to say. Not going to say anything. But Kimmy, that, anyway. Okay, so I didn't get that. That must be a setting.
I don't know. It's not a setting I ever made.
Karsten, did you put the beta on first?
No,
or?
I did not put the beta on.
And now Burke McQuinn's calling me. Hi, Burke. Hey, hello. Oh, I must have hung up on him.
Yeah, on my other phone, which I did have the beta on, it has Google News and the Daily 360, which I never, ever... Okay. The New York Times, I never...
Artificial intelligence. Let's just...
It's artificial for a reason.
Okay. Well, no, Google is actually, I mean, some of their suggestions are a little weird, but like I find that their AI, for example, in Google Docs or what is it called? Sheets and all of that. It actually accurately recommends, like, we open our show notes or this. I open my show notes for Twit every day around or every week at the same time. And it automatically puts that up at the top for me.
Oh.
So if I'm in, yeah. On
oh,
Wednesday
yeah, that's
afternoons.
Right. It does me too. Yes.
So my assumption was that this would be similar, except now because it's got location from your phone, if you share it, you can just, I mean, like things like when I get in my car, for example, I always open maps. If it can start figuring that kind of stuff out, that's actually kind of valuable. I don't know if it's going to be, but.
You know what the single use, most useful thing to me is the new volume control.
Yeah.
Interface. So when you press a volume up or down button, you get a little screen that pops up that shows you your volume. Don't touch, Leo. Shows your volume, shows you your vibration status, you know, silent, vibrating, ringer, your music. So it makes a distinction between ring sounds and music sounds and then lets you with a touch go right to the settings. I think that's nice.
When we
feature.
Did All About Android at I.O., that's the thing we were all cavilling over.
Yeah. That's, to me, that's like, isn't it funny how just little, that and the swipe are the things I care about. But I'll be
so
interested to see what
happens.
It's odd
to me they used a whole position for a screenshot.
Oh, what is the new screenshot?
So if you do the power button.
Yeah.
And hold that down, it gives you three options, power off, restart, and screenshot.
Oh.
No. Oh.
Well, that's
nice. Okay, but I don't think I needed a whole.
Well, the old
screenshot.
Way you had to do it.
The old way was hard.
You had
I
to
was
press
constantly
these at the same time, two buttons at the same time. That was kind of a pain in the butt.
Five out of six times, I would screw that up.
Yeah.
Like I would just be
turn
like
off the
perpetually.
Phone. Yeah.
Yeah, or the volume would go. Let's see
right.
if I.
Yeah. So now it's
a bit weird place to put it. How do I get a screenshot? Well, of course, you hit the power button and hold it down.
Right. There's also
that's how it is on the iPad. Is that how you do it on the iPad?
I don't
remember anymore.
No, I think the iPad is still home and power.
Home and power. Okay, yeah.
Which is, those dual button things are hard to do. All right. So artificial intelligence. I like
artificial intelligence. This is the same artificial intelligence that's going to save us from
the robots,
spam and hatred and everything else.
Yeah. AI is helping us with spam. It is not helping us with hatred as much because you have the training data and people adapt very well. Right. This is, again, I will say, look, we call it a lot of things AI. True AI involves applying neural networks to lots of data and having it understand something, right? So that's one version. There's also other types of AI in training. But when we start talking about all of this, we have to remember that they're learning based on the information we've given them. So unless we're talking about reinforcement learning, and then they're learning based on the rewards we're giving them. And so we can't expect too much from this. It's not going to be magic. So
if you want to sign up for digital well-being, it's not in there yet, but you can get in the beta by going.
I was kind of creeped out by that.
By digital well-being or by the fact that you had to do the beta or what?
No, by the concept of digital well-being.
I'm creeped out by it.
Really?
Yeah. I'm like, nanny like state. Some of the things. It's less nanny state and more like it feels duplicitous to give them all this information and like have them decide what my digital well-being is going to look like. Is it notifications that are freaking me out? I mean, I just kind of look at this and
Here's what I think. I think that it's interesting because, of course, all these people are doing it and everybody's doing it now. Not only is iOS and Android doing it, but YouTube's doing it. Instagram is doing it. They're all putting in features that say, use this less time, how much I use it. I'm going to sleep now, so do some things to make it less attractive. All of this runs counter to their business model, which is, of course, the more you use it, the more money they make. So you might say, well, why are they doing this? Well, it's obvious why they're doing it. They're doing it to put the critics mind at ease while fully knowing nobody's going to do this, that it's annoying to everybody. And so it has this kind of great benefit of it looks like they care. It puts Congress and other critics at ease, and it costs them nothing because you're not going to do it. That's my opinion.
I agree. You know,
I think Google is very aware that we're trying to move beyond screens. And so I would say that this is also in preparation for understanding how to deliver information through other mediums. So through maybe voice, maybe speakers, maybe hearables. So I would look at it more broadly as gathering information about what stresses people out, what kind of information should be on the phone.
Yeah.
So I would look at this almost as a data grab in some ways.
Isn't that funny? So now there's three good reasons to do it. I mean, when you see Instagram do something that will to design to reduce your usage of Instagram, either they're under such intense heat that they have to do something, or more likely their research shows, and my informal research would agree, nobody's going to do that. I tried it on the iOS. I'm doing the iOS 12 beta. I turned it on, and it was so annoying because you'd wake up in the middle of the night and you want to play a little Pokemon Go, as one does. And it'd say, you've already done too much of that today. Or you should be sleeping, and then right under it, there's a button that says, or you could just ignore this and keep on going. And then when you hit that, it says, do you want me to remind you about this at all? And you say, no, never again. And I think that my behavior is exactly what people are going to do. They're going to do it.
I think it's also.
They're going to be annoyed, and they're going to turn it off.
It's ass covering.
It's ass covering.
It's like the lawyers who insist that now escalators have to have instructions on how to walk.
I know. Lisa always laughs when we open a bottle, that's got one of those desiccant packets and it says, do not eat. Or, our hot tub won't go hotter than 104 degrees because the state of California has deemed it dangerous to have a 105 degree hot tub, which is my preferred temperature, even though I can make my bathtub 110 degrees if I want.
Have you hacked the hot tub?
No, I asked, you know, I went to the hot tub guy. I said, well, how do I hack this? He said, oh, you can't hack it. It's. But I did just buy an electric bike, which has also been throttled to 20 miles an hour. And I have. I know. Like, come on. So, but that's apparently fairly easy.
What bike did you get?
Oh, you want to see? I've shown everybody else has seen it already.
I know. I figured. But.
It's an electric bike with vestigial pedals. In other words, they don't really. They have to put pedals on, otherwise it's not an electric bike. But you're not expected to pedal at all.
Oh, I thought the idea was it was helping you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the idea. Yeah. Except
this just helps more.
Except, sure, that's the idea. Yeah. Mm-hmm. If you want to pedal, you can, but you don't have to. And by you're putting pedals on there and putting a throttle on there that is limited to 20 miles an hour, you don't have to have a license. You don't have to get permission. You can, you know, it's a bicycle. It's a bicycle. See, it's got pedals. It's a bicycle. Anyway, doesn't that look cool? It looks like the motorcycle Steve McQueen rode in The Great Escape. Looks like an Indian or some of those old fashioned motorcycles.
Yeah,
isn't that cool? Yeah, Burke's saying he can hack my hot tub, so maybe that's why he was calling. Burke has apparently hacked time and space as well. As if you have a Pixel 2, you can get Android Pie right now, right? You just update, and you should be getting it soon. If you have an Essential phone, their Android 9 update is rolling out.
Oh,
yeah.
A non-Google phone is getting it.
Oh. Yeah. Well, that's what happened with the public beta, too. There were a number of phones getting it.
There are only a few Essential phones out there, so, you know, why not?
Easy enough. Give you something. Now, let me ask you. I was also saying you can get the digital well-being now if you go to it in the App Store and sign up for the beta. And then you wait for your request an invitation and you wait for your email. I don't think I've gotten mine yet because I really want it. Because then I can turn it off sooner. Let me just see if I have it yet.
Sometimes I think it would be nice. Like it again, there are very few times when I would be excited about it, but I would kind of like as I'm standing there in like a daze at 11 o'clock at night, just scrolling through, you know, Twitter or the New York Times or whatever. Yeah. Just be like, hey, why don't you go to bed now?
Yeah.
My Fitbit actually does that. And I'm like, yeah, you know what, Fitbit? Good plan.
I get a lot of those from a lot of sources.
I'd get angry and be awake for 2 hours.
Maybe it's us. Maybe it's just you and me, Jeff, that we're just
grumpy old men.
Yeah, well, we're anti-authoritarian.
Yeah.
Some people like to be told what to do. We do not. In fact, if you tell us to do something, we're more likely to do the opposite. Just a little
bit. Even if it hurts us, yes.
Even if it's bad.
Yeah.
I have not gotten the invitation. I was hoping by the show I would have. You go to sign up for the digital well-being. Actually, you don't do it on your phone. You do it on the web. And you can enroll in the beta.
I should try it.
Send the email. And someday,
what do you look up?
Where did I find this? It's at android.com. Let me see if you go to, I think maybe, I wonder if you can go from the front page, find it. Go to learn more about Pi and then tailored to you, blah, 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 adjust less, adaptive battery, adaptive brightness, adapt for this, adapt for that, getting around just got easier. Digital well-being, great technology should help, not distract. Doesn't that family look really tired, like they were up all night on their phones?
Yeah, they've been arguing and fighting, and they're trying to get along now, but they're about to get divorced.
And mom, if you keep feeding the kids these simple carbohydrates like orange juice and Cheerios, of course they're going to be...
Wait. Why are you judging mom for that? The dad could have given them that.
No, the dad's smart. He's just drinking coffee. He's drinking black coffee.
She's got cereal, too. The three of them are eating cereal.
Maybe he bought it at the grocery store and... And
you got dummy berries, which are probably wax. And maybe dad's having that toast. Maybe not. It's unclear. Somebody not at the table is having milk. So maybe the photographer. I don't know. Why is there a glass of milk just sitting out in the middle of nowhere? What's going on there? Huh? Is that for Elijah? All right. So
that's for the cereal.
Yeah. Oh, is that? Oh, hey. Okay. Little tip to dad. Get a pitcher. You can't pour milk from a glass. Okay, just a little tip.
True.
Uh-huh. I'm trying to find...
I just did it. Okay. Just did it. I got to it.
Okay.
There, right there.
There it is. Have a Pixel. And by the way, do you like that nice wood grain? That's exactly the same wood as used on the back of the Lenovo smart home.
It makes me feel calm.
Display.
See, you know, it's already working.
It's Scandinavian. That's that IKEA fake wood.
I'm calm when I go to IKEA.
You can now try. You can try digital well-being beta now. Click sign up, and you'll get this form, and then they'll ignore you. Or not. So are you happy with pie?
Can you think of any desserts that start with Q?
Yeah. Pie is, I like pie. What do we do with Q?
They had to make a pie. They had to.
Miriam Jouar suggested quiche.
That's not a dessert.
It does begin with Q.
It does. Nice try. But
quince jam?
Quince. Ew. is there like a, I don't know, something with quarters in it that...
Quesito. You might like that as a
queso.
Queso.
Oh,
cheese filled pastry queso? Pastry twist.
There it's we go. Winner.
Dessert queso.
I have that.
Quesito. Oddly enough, they don't have quince jam in the suggestions from The Verge. Obviously.
What do they have?
Queen of puddings.
Queen of puddings.
That's
I don't think Android Q, Queen of Puddings. That's a very Baz Luhrmann kind of a. I don't think that's going to make it. None of these quirks. That's quirks. Apparently, is not a site to go to. It's a forbidden,
forbidden
site. So, pie.
Yeah,
I thought pie is a. It was a good compromise. It's kind of short. All the other ones
have pie joke. We'll have pie jokes at some point. Yeah, I have jokes.
Pie, and the nice thing is now we're going to have pie every Tuesday on All About Android. They had Oreo. They had Oreo pie yesterday. That was awesome. Very inspired. It's like a transitional pie.
A transitional pie.
The bridge building pie.
So, did you see the article in The Verge about the Magic Leap? I tried Magic Leap and saw
and the
best minds of my generation. No. Adi Robertson, she's saying, I tried Magic Leap, saw a flawed glimpse of mixed reality's amazing potential. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's almost $3,000, but it's not, well, 20, I'm sorry,
no,
$2,300. It's the creator edition. That's a longstanding tradition. Google Glass was $1,500.
Remind me, will you? Thank you very much.
Yeah. This looks better than Google Glass, sort of.
Well,
sort of. Doesn't work a lot better than HoloLens. Well, maybe it does a little
Magic
bit.
Magic Leap is supposedly building goggles that can change people's perception of reality.
That's Addy. She got to try it. She said, yeah, it's augmented reality. It's better than what you'd get with an iPhone, but it's not perfect. You do carry this little puck on your belt that is the processor.
Little?
Well... Relatively compared to the, big computers.
Backpack computer.
Yeah.
True.
And that, by the way, that button, that's a pause button. They call it reality. So when you press it, you go back to reality. That is the traditional VR style controller that you would carry on your wrist. What's interesting about this is it does not accommodate. It looks more like spectacles. And that's what they were going for with the round. But it doesn't accommodate lenses underneath it. But you can buy prescription lenses that are magnetic that snap in.
Can I take my Google Glass lenses and repurpose them, please?
Oh, that's right.
That I bought and paid for?
I think, Jeff, from now on, you should wear your Google Glasses. You don't have to charge them up or use them.
Can you still run apps on them?
No
or is
idea.
It a bricked device? Jeff, how in the name
much.
Of science... It hurts too much.
Broke his heart. Hey, I bought a pair and I have never even gotten to... Who has my... does Jason have those still? Jason, can I have my glasses back now?
For the museum? Actually, I have to take it my... As I have the Museum of Dead Technology in my office, I need to take them in for that.
Exactly.
So
that's where it would go.
Would you guys buy this?
No.
Let's ask. The price is crazy.
I thought about it. Well,
of course you did, Leo.
I buy stuff that's that price because I need to, it's our job to look at this stuff. Even I can't, I just don't think this is going to be important. honestly.
VR?
We bought Google Glass. I didn't buy HoloLens. This is the magic.
HoloLens is actually really interesting. I really like the HoloLens experience.
But it's very limited, and Microsoft has made no progress. Zero since they released it. This is how it looks. What do you think? How would you think this is you?
Not me. I can't walk around in the world without reality.
But I would imagine it would be less disturbing than being blocked off from the world.
Because you are looking at the world through this, but stuff's superimposed.
And you could move for games. It'd be amazing. You could move through a space.
Are you trying to talk me into getting this?
Oh, yeah, you have to. Because we want to see you in it.
I don't know.
Oh, I didn't see the back. My. Oh, that's serious, too. Yeah.
She said it was pretty comfortable. And this is a prototype. I mean, not a prototype exactly, but it's not the finished product. So let me read you Addie's description of the experience. By the way, Magic Leap is the darling of Silicon Valley. They've raised $2.3 billion. First investor was Google. J.P. Morgan's put in money. It was created by Roni Abovitz, who was originally creating a movie and then said, in order for this to work, we need to create this entire augmented reality thing. He announced Magic Leap in 2012 with a TEDx talk, Addie writes, in which he donned a full spacesuit and spoke for 30 seconds. Today, he won't even confirm it was him in the spacesuit. Let's see. At some point, Robertson has a description. Oh, here it is. She put the Magic Leap on. When you write about augmented reality headsets, you're supposed to start by describing something impossible, like a pastel dinosaur stomping its feet in a quiet office space in Florida. That's where Magic Leap is. This dinosaur is made of fist-sized blocks that look like candy. And the office belongs to Magic Leap, a mysterious startup that's been working in near total secrecy for 7 years. I should clarify, the dinosaur also isn't real. It exists only in the lenses of the Magic Leap 1, a pair of goggles, et cetera, et cetera. So in reality, the dinosaur I see through the Magic Leap 1 looks genuinely three-dimensional, but pieces start getting cut off when I approach it. When a man walks behind it, I can see him slightly. My headset doesn't account for relative distance, so it's impossible for somebody to walk in between me and the dinosaur, no matter how close they are. It's a wonderful, fascinating illusion, maybe the best I've seen in one of these headsets, and far cooler than watching an AR model through an iPhone screen. But it's not the kind of revolutionary or downright magical advance that Magic Leap has teased for years. This is the first time a lot of people have seen Magic Leap. Remember, was it Stephen Levy, I think, who went? No. Anyway, people have gone and described it in magical terms, but they haven't been allowed to talk about it. So this is the first time we've really seen behind the curtain.
But you really can't show it. That's going to be when it comes time to sell this stuff.
Guess what? I think it's Best Buy is going to have some that you can go try on.
Best Buy.
She talks about it.
Because Best Buy is now a marketing space, so it makes sense.
Yeah. I'm trying to find it in the article because I don't remember what retailer it is. Oh, AT&T. AT&T has already committed. Oh, no, they're going to do this later with wireless plans. I'm sorry. Some retailer will have it in. You can do a demo at their store. Somebody. That's what Microsoft's doing with HoloLens. You can go to a Microsoft store and try it. So there will be a way to try it, but you're exactly right. I mean, that's one of the problems with VR as well, is that it's hard to do a test drive before you spend hundreds of dollars on these things.
Well, and it's hard to find a compelling use case that gets you to spend $100. I mean, like stickers.
AR is not hard to find a compelling use case for.
So AR as it stands today, in industrial stuff, sure, it's compelling. In consumer type things at that price point, I still think it's a little hard.
I'd pay this price if it were fully functional. It didn't look like I was wearing, ant headgear. If I didn't look like Ant-Man wearing it, I would pay $2,300 for it if I could walk around and see what people's names were, you know, get, mm-hmm. you know, get reputation mm-hmm. information, look at stuff and say, you know, like, okay, we're going to be in Barcelona in 3 weeks. If I could wear this around Barcelona and hear and see stuff about what I'm looking at, that would be cool.
And have people pointing at you all the time.
Well, do you want it to look normal, like hidden, or do you want it to look like a device on your face, but not quite that device?
We're a long way off from it being hidden. I think that's the dream, right, is that it looks like spectacles, like normal spectacles. Mm-hmm. But
well, that's why I'm curious, because like,
I don't want to get beat up. But you laugh, but people got beat up wearing Google Glass.
Yeah.
I don't want to get beat up. I don't mind if people know I'm wearing something kind of different.
Okay.
Ideally, you know, they would look like something more normal. But they're getting closer. This is the, you know, if you wore HoloLens around, you'd really look like you were some strange being.
Yeah.
And you can't really. I mean, it's a big backpack. This is a lot smaller. All right, maybe I'll get this.
Sorry, Lisa.
Oh, no, you don't have to worry. To my left, there's a 100-inch projection screen television from Hisense that's $10,000, and she's already decided she wants that. We're going to review that on the new screensavers. So I'm good.
It's a projection TV? They're back?
Well, see the box below that screen? It's not. Yeah. It's 8 inches away from the wall. That's the point, is that's the projector. It's a very, very short throw projector. So you can basically put it where the TV is now, put the screen above it, and so the projector is right. There it is. It's projecting it right now. Oh, that's kind of interesting. It's projecting it right now from that box below. Not the big box. That's just something it's sitting on.
It's better than...
It's UHD 4K. It looks like a projection. I would say it looks like a projector. We're gonna.
What's the advantage?
It's a short throw, 100-inch screen. 100 inches.
100-inch. Got it.
That's why she wants it. She wants it in time for a Monday Night Football. We want Jimmy Garoppolo to be in the room with us. That's what we want. I'm trying to find. I'm sorry. I should have highlighted it or something.
Would you use something to build an app for the Magic Leap? Because you've got AR Kit and you have what is Google's? What's it called?
Their AR Core.
AR Core. Does Magic Leap have its own version of AR Whatchamajigger?
It must, but it's
okay,
not.
So that's a suck.
They don't. What they don't say is what operating system, what the API or SDK looks like. What, you know, they don't say anything about that. It may only be in house. This is called the Creator's Edition, much like the HoloLens is. So that implies that as a creator of content, you would want to get this.
They're again, cool use cases, but I would say I would wait. I wouldn't buy it. But you should go for it.
Is there a resale value?
No.
No, don't do it. Actually, Leo, don't do it.
Don't do it.
Don't do it.
It's available to creators in city. Oh, yeah. Oh, that's another thing. You can only buy it in 5 cities.
Oh, which 5 cities?
San Francisco is one of them.
No surprise.
Sorry, we're not delivering to your area.
Tucson?
If I put a San Francisco zip code, I could get it. I know, that's kind of weird, too. They're not...
Well, remember Google Glass, you had to go in and get trained.
Oh, that must be it, right, because you can't just... You can't buy it online. All right, I think we can stop talking about this. Otherwise, I might buy it.
Otherwise, you might buy it, which is a sport I would enjoy.
No, this morning as I'm reading about it, preparing for the show, I'm thinking, I really seriously thought, should I get one? I didn't get the HoloLens. We did get Google Glass. Maybe that was the lesson learned. I don't know.
But
I
feel like...
Just wait. Just wait a little bit. You'll be okay.
Oh, no. Don't misunderstand me. I don't have any need for this at all. My only question is it important enough that we should talk about it, review it from a point of view of having used it, Or just,
I don't think so. Not
I think yet. We can no. trust Addie Robertson and leave it at that.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I agree.
It's a curiosity for quite some time.
It's a curiosity still.
And it's not. I think if you're if your viewers would say, they going to invest in this?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and I'm curious if The Verge is going to create like a heads up display curse, because remember they did that deep dive into Intel's wireless glasses, the Vaunt?
It's like being on the cover of Sports Illustrated. It's the end.
So it could be if these guys have problems, then I'm calling it. I'm going to be like, oh, you don't want The Verge.
I'm
to
calling it. You know what? I got a good compromise. We'll get Addie Robertson on one of our shows to describe
good idea.
How about that? That's the compromise. And by the way, The Verge didn't buy it either. They went to Magic Sleep headquarters to try it. So, and they got more money than I do, that's for sure.
They went to Florida in July. That's working hard.
Oh, man, that's tough work. By the way, so this year, Podcast Expo was in or is in August in Philadelphia, which is, by the way, right now, not a great place to be. A little hot. Wow. A little hot. Next year, it's going to be Orlando in August.
Well, you get the cheap
rooms. It tells you something about the podcast industry. You get the cheap rooms.
Wow. So I just looked it up, right? There's Podcast Movement.
That's the one, Podcast Movement.
There's Podcast Multimedia Expo.
Oh, I don't know that
Podfest.
We go to Podcast Movement.
You do go.
I think Andrew goes to that.
Yeah. Andrew was at it last time. Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
That's the one.
It's in July. It was July 23 to 26.
Yeah, we just missed it.
That was when Google Next was.
Right. So you couldn't go. Did Andrew go this year?
No, because I was at Google.
You see? So next year he can go while you stay home.
There we go.
Feet Cheerios to the kid. All right. Thank you for the correction. It's probably Dad. Dad's known for feeding cereal to children. My father was famous for home fries.
My dad was famous for pancakes.
Yeah, dads are good at pancakes. I was the waffle guy in our house.
No, I'm the waffle girl. But
Mr. Waffle.
Dad is pancake man.
All right, I got to break to the end of the show and I got to hear. Are you both buying new June ovens?
Shh. That's coming up as we continue with this edition of This Week in Google. She already talked me into this. What was it, $1,400?
Okay, we're going to go.
She already talked me into that. She already talked me into that one.
You don't regret it.
The toaster oven with a camera in it. No, I don't.
See?
We got a lot of good mileage out of that.
Time to replace it.
Our show today. Right. My favorite was when I demonstrated it and I said, you know, you can see what's cooking in it. And there was somebody cooking toast in it right when I opened it up. So who's in our house? This edition of This Week in Google brought to you by WordPress.com. I'm a big fan. That's where my site is. Actually, I started using WordPress when Matt Mullenweg first created it in the early 2000s. I was initially running it on my own server, but the expense and the time consuming, you know, keeping it running and all that stuff, eventually I was doing more of that and less blogging. So I thought, well, I'm going to go to WordPress.com. It's less expensive than paying for my own hosting. They manage it. They take care of hosting, security, software updates, giving you time to focus on what you created the site for in the first place, your presence on the internet. Everybody needs to have a place of their own, a home of their own, a room of one's own on the internet, a place where you put up your best stuff. That's part of controlling your reputation, if nothing else. And if you're a business, you better put your site up there. Otherwise, when they Google your business name, they're going to find Yelp or something like that. Even if, you know, your business is a very, you know, in the present, not a tech business, but, you know, you're cleaning gutters or washing windows or, you know, a plumber, you need to have a website so that I know when I hire somebody new, I always check out their website first. That's how you communicate with your customers. You may say, I have a Facebook page. No, that's not yours. That's Mr. Zuckerberg's. I have a Twitter feed. No, that's not yours. That's Mr. Dorsey's. You need to have yours at WordPress.com. No limits. Create the ultimate online hub that's yours. And with room to grow as you aim higher, they've got great e-commerce options, everything from a simple buy button to a full online store. You can upload images. You can upload video. You can upload audio. So it can host all of that, import and export content to and from your WordPress website. If you're on another platform, easy to move, easy peasy. It's your site, your home, your content. And with built-in SEO, social media linking, and marketing tools, you can grow your audience and reach new customers. They've got a great WordPress app on iOS and Android that makes it easy to manage your site on the go, not only moderate comments, but post new content. And you can launch your website with confidence knowing that they have a fantastic support team. They're 24/7. No wonder 31% of all websites run on WordPress. That's almost a third of every website in the world. Many great publications. Paul Thurrott's site runs on WordPress. Steve Gibson's page, his blog, runs on WordPress. Sure, he could host himself, but it's just so much easier to put it on WordPress.com. WordPress plans start at just $4 a month, too, so it's a lot less than hosting it yourself. It's just the way to go. Right now, you'll get 15% off your new plan purchase when you go to WordPress.com/twig. Stand out from the crowd. Create your own website. Put your mark on the world. WordPress.com/twig. My daughter did that, and you know, she's got poetry on there and video and papers that she's written for school. It's a really good idea because that way, you know, you put your mark on the web, and when people search for your name, that's going to be the first thing they're going to find. WordPress. Oh, and by the way, putting it on WordPress is a good idea because it's well it's indexed by Google. That's all that SEO stuff they do. WordPress.com/twig. And is the June oven going to be a pick? Should we save it for the end?
We can.
Well, it's up to you. Okay. If you're going to talk about it at the end, we'll save that for the end. That's fine. Let's talk about actually probably the biggest story around Google these days. And first of all, we should say that Google has not announced this, but there was a rumor that Google was going to work on a censored version of Google search. This comes from The Intercept, Ryan Gallagher, for China. Leaked documents reveal Google's planning to launch a censored version of its search engine in China that will blacklist websites and search terms about human rights, democracy, religion, peaceful protest, all the things the Chinese government doesn't like. According to The Intercept, the project, codenamed Dragonfly, has been underway since the spring of last year. It was accelerated in December when Sundar Pichai met with a top Chinese government official. And there are huge protests at Google from Google employees who say, no, we got out of China because we didn't
like, reason.
For a good reason, their human rights record.
So we talked about this last week.
Oh, it's over. Okay, never mind.
No. I was going to say.
The stories kept going, yeah.
Yeah, the story kept going. So last week it had just broken. Oh, okay. And, you know, okay. Jeff and I were talking about, you know, Jeff, as one can imagine, was, this is evil. Google should draw a line and stick to it.
I didn't use the word evil, but I said I was disappointed.
Yeah, I think that I've said before when it comes to Apple, for instance, working with the Chinese government, that American companies need to stand up and say, we're not going to work in authoritarian regimes, even if we could make a lot of money there.
Yeah, you could argue that they work with authoritarian regimes right now in the U.S. But
this is not an authoritarian regime.
What
am
I going to say?
Come on. You may not like it, but this is not comparable to China yet.
There are some practices that are, actually. But
I guess
I was
going
to say,
all right, I guess
I was waiting for,
as long as you're not an immigrant, it's okay here.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, I was waiting for Google employees to weigh in, and
they did.
And predictably, they are unhappy. So I will see. I'm curious what happens from that perspective if individual Googlers end up preventing this or what goes on there.
This is that old argument companies make that, well, we have to obey the laws of the countries we work in. The thing that's different about Google
is Google, choose to be in them.
Google decided not to do business in China because of its human rights record. And now they're apparently considering going back. It's, of course, tempting because there's a lot of money to be made in China. It's a billion Chinese people who are active, avid internet users in many cases.
I'll make a prediction.
Go ahead.
even if they do everything China wants, which is a lot more now than it would have been when they left, which is a story up on the rundown, the rules have gotten worse and worse. Even if they did everything that China wanted, they'll fail there because you have to be a Chinese company to succeed.
Yeah, Baidu has said, "Oh, we'll beat them easy. Come on in, Google." Baidu is Google of China. So China already blocks Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. So Google would have to block all that. This is from The Observer. Anything that's anti-communism, party content, any political dissidents, of course, that's obvious. Controversial news content. Pornography.
Controversial being defined as things that are critical of government.
Yeah. Revelations of business or political scandals. Anything harmful to social stability. Pornography, gambling, and violence. Winnie the Pooh is banned in China, and that goes back to the fact that dissidents compared President Xi to a bear. During his visit to the U.S. in 2013, a meme comparing a photo of him and Barack Obama to an image of Pooh and Tigger went viral in China. She didn't like it. Winnie the Pooh's been banned ever since. Google, do you really want to be in a country where an autocratic leader can ban an image because he doesn't like it? Because he finds it insulting?
I don't know. It's just the world now. What are you going to do about
it? What I find interesting, this is not the first time Google employees have become vocal activists against company policy. Not a lot of companies have that problem. Most employees just go along.
Microsoft and where did I put up the third one? There was a story here that said this, that there have been employee revolts on ethical issues at Google and Microsoft. And what was the third one?
Twit. No.
Twitch.
Apple?
I wouldn't be surprised if Apple employees were.
You know, they're in a highly lucrative field. And
Amazon.
Yeah. And there's such competition for the workers.
Not Apple, though. Interesting.
Either way. Yeah. So.
And not Facebook.
Not Facebook.
I think, you know, they're secure in their jobs in the sense that if they get fired from Google, they probably can go work at another company.
Yeah.
That's true. So this is specifically, it's a story in nationalinterest.org about what they call engineering insurgency and say that these were three potential protests around the use of AI. Right? At Google, it was the drone image AI.
That's right.
It's been Amazon killer robots.
Isn't this what we've been calling for, though, is that technologists should be aware of the consequences of their inventions and actions and should be responsible and should stand up?
I think so.
Yeah. I mean,
I interviewed Jonathan Zunger.
Love Jonathan.
For a project. He's brilliant.
He was at Google. He was a Google engineer.
He was at Google. He's left to go to startup. He's really smart. And he said that software engineers have to develop the same kind of standards of behavior as civil engineers did. Civil engineer would build a bridge, and the goal was it better not fall down.
Right.
If it fell down, you haven't done your job. So what's the equivalent? It's a lot easier to see a bridge and see whether it's up or down, but what's the equivalent in software engineering and the impact you have and the danger you present? And that it's a professional standard that has to develop. I think he's smart and right.
If you throw that at, so I'm going to take it a step further. If you build a bridge and it falls down, that is obviously a bad thing. But what if you build a bridge and it allows movement of populations from one place to another and thus changes a culture? Because I think the analogy, but civil engineers don't actually have to think about that. And what we're asking technologists to do is actually that step further. Because you could say, hey, does your code work? Yeah. So, and usually if you're thinking about building a bridge, you actually do something like that under municipal auspices. So you have a, you know, vote for bond issues to build such bridge or whatever. So I'm just throwing that out there as a thought process, because that's a more democratic thing to think about. And we're trying to assign responsibility to these people. And I don't know how far whose job is it to look ahead for the impact of some of these things? Not just that, you know, anyway.
Well, you're absolutely right, Stacey, and it's whose job and how possible is it to really know the impact? I'm going back to my Gutenberg stuff, right? It took hundreds of years to get a lot of the impact in place, and we're guessing at it, and we don't know. And you're right, you may be building something that has a positive impact. And my moral panic arguments is if you cut off potential bad impact, you don't know what you're losing. So it's hard, but I think you have to have some ethic of impact, some ethic of thinking about this. Now, I will not go as far as Tristan Harris arguing that, you know, these are all made to addict us and that's evil. That doesn't give us enough agency and enough credit. We're giving people choices that they can make. But we've got to have an ethic of worrying about it a little bit.
It's interesting because I'm sure that the original leak to The Intercept probably came from a Google employee working on this. And since the leak, The Intercept reports that on a number of Google sites, people are saying yes. A number of other Googlers have independently confirmed the plan to Reuters, The Wall Street Journal, The New York Times, The Financial Times, Agency France-Presse, Vice News, and Bloomberg. One source, this is from The Intercept, one source who spoke to Bloomberg characterized the product as a censorship engine. Remember, Google got out of China in 2010. At that time, saying it was because of Chinese government efforts to limit free speech, block websites, and hack Google. So,
right, and force Google to change Google rather than the government saying this is illegal, don't do this, you choose yes or no.
Right.
They were. It's not unlike what's happening in some parts of the European regulation. No, we're going to make you do it, Google. As I remember.
Yeah, but I do. I'm looking at the blog post from March 22nd, 2010. This followed on the heels of Google announcing that they and 20 other U.S. companies have been the victims of a cyber attack originating from China. They were looking for the Gmail accounts of dozens of human rights activists. And it was at that time. Yeah. Remember that?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, it was at that time this is how they did it. Stopped censoring our search services, Google Search, Google News, and Google Images on google.cn, the Chinese version of Google. Users visiting google.cn are now simply redirected to the Hong Kong version where we are offering uncensored search. And so that's been the status quo for the last 8 years since then. So what it sounds like is they want to bring back Google CN, and in order to do that, of course, you'd have to comply with those Chinese government regulations about what search engines can, what results they can produce. I mean, I guess Baidu does the same thing, right? They're a Chinese search engine, right?
Yeah.
Yes. And what's interesting is Baidu has some excellent kind of image recognition technology and that sort of thing. And I'm very curious what it does with the data it gets in terms of handing things over to the government.
Right.
And don't forget, China has their social IQ score that they're playing with, which if you think about Google participating in something like that, gets really
And incidentally, weird. China has started exporting this social IQ to other countries, to friendly nations. There's no question in my mind that this, you know, not only has China become authoritarian under Xi, much more authoritarian under Xi, who is now president for life, but wants to export its form of authoritarian rule to other countries using its economics. I think this Google has to take this pretty seriously.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that's going to happen is, I mean, we keep on waiting for China to export its businesses to the rest of the world. And the argument that I hear when I talk to people about this is the Chinese market is just so damned huge. They don't need to yet. And they operate under such advantage now. But at some point, you know, Baidu and WeChat are going to come out into our market and they're going to come with these limitations. I don't know if you saw that the DNC basically ordered every campaign, every Democrat to not use phones from Huawei and LTC.
Yeah, this came up because there was a local committee was about to buy a bunch of, I think, ZTE
phones. Are they buying Lenovo laptops? I mean,
well, but it's a very interesting point. I mean, ZTE and Huawei are particularly suspect because they are at least partially owned by the Chinese military, by the government. One of them was founded by Chinese military. So their ties are very close to the Chinese government. Maybe more so than Lenovo. I don't know. Yeah, that's a good question.
And we have stopped them from coming. They've tried to come in several times in various guises with various deals.
I have a very nice Huawei phone, the P20, that is a really remarkable phone. And I don't consider it more dangerous
to me.
I always
wondered about you, Laporte. That you were a spy.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Here's where, okay, this is the far-fetched risk. If the Chinese were to invade the United States, they'd have a nice dossier on people who are using their equipment. If you are a government worker or you're in the DNC where you've already been hacked once, at least once, it would make sense that you wouldn't want to give information to another country. If you're a company, there's always the risk of competitive espionage. So in those cases, yeah, but I don't think China's going to invade us, so I think I'm okay, unless they really want
to. Well, I mean,
duplicate.
I don't think Russia's going to invade us, but they're going to invade us digitally.
Yeah.
They have invaded us digitally.
Yeah, that's an interest. So we talk a lot about Russia and their attempt to influence the elections and so forth. We'll stipulate that that happened. I think that's pretty clear. Do you think China is trying to do the same thing? Have they done the same thing? And
I think China is much more interested in competitive intelligence.
Right.
So there have been plenty of examples of them grabbing intelligence from American companies.
Right.
And things like getting information for, you know, dissidents. So I think that's more of its interest. I don't think China really cares about invading the U.S. Or probably messing with our elections as much as Russia
does. They have different geopolitical aims. They're actually a real economic powerhouse, which Russia is not. And Russia would love to reclaim some of its territories in the former Soviet Union. China is not. Well, China has its own territorial
aims. They have their own territorial aims.
Yeah. I don't know. It's interesting.
Hello, South China Sea Islands.
I'm more scared about Facebook getting my banking information.
This is going to piss me off.
I know. That's why I brought it up.
This story was so sensationalistically and misleadingly done.
And that's what TechCrunch said. They said that the Wall Street Journal overblew this story, that Facebook was looking for chat to partner with banks to do chatbots. But the Journal said, in its headline anyway, give us your data, Facebook to banks. Give us your data. We'll give you our users.
This is why I won't pay for the Wall Street Journal, is this kind of techno-panic, agenda-based pseudo-journalism against technology. It pisses me off.
Well, come on. You think that Emily Glazer and Deepa Sethuraman
and Anna Maria Andriotis.
They probably didn't write their own headline. That's what.
So the headline, let's throw out. Headlines are always should be thrown out, right? Because writers.
No, the headline is how the editors have an impact on the story and know it's going to get passed around. And
so what's the story say? The story says a social media giant has asked large U.S. banks to share detailed financial information about their customers, including card transactions and checking account balances, as part of an effort to offer new services to users.
Now, write this the right way. Facebook, like many services elsewhere, including all over China, is looking at offering chat as direct customer service, including banking. Not a big deal at all. It's not about give us this data. They're trying to make it into scare words. The lead could have gotten rewritten like the head, but it's irresponsible.
Yeah, in fact, the rest of the article goes on to say Facebook's basically, and imagine, would you like this, considering a feature where Facebook Messenger would show your checking account balance, maybe fraud alerts.
If you ask for it. Yeah.
First of all, you have to say, I am a customer of, you know, U.S. Bank Corp, and I want this to be in my Messenger, or let me follow the chatbot. Now, I don't know why Facebook needs to have this information.
Look at all these things you can do on WeChat. Isn't that what we should have that?
Yeah,
so Facebook tries to do that.
Data privacy is a sticking point in the bank's conversations with Facebook, said people familiar with the matter. In other words, banks are pushing back, saying one large U.S. bank pulled away from the talks due to privacy concerns.
Which is a PR question. The journalists do a story just like this.
You don't know if it's a PR question or if Facebook's asking for more than it might need for this. I mean, understanding your customer data is your gold right now. The companies think that that's their big thing. I don't necessarily agree with all of it, but Facebook could be asking for more information than they want to give or to be the point of control for this. And the banks are like, yeah, you know what? If we give you this, we actually want a little bit more in return. So it could be PR or negotiation.
By the way, we know Facebook would ask for that. Why wouldn't they?
Right.
Of course they're going to ask for it. They may not expect they'll get it. Yeah. But they're going to say, give us all value. They're going to start, the conversation starts with, hey, give us all this information and we'll give you this. But, and then whoa, the bank says, whoa. our customers.
You're jumping right over right there. That's what TechCrunch gets better than the Wall Street Journal does. The way the Wall Street Journal presents it is, give us all this information and we'll offer you something. The way TechCrunch presents it is, no, I as a customer can ask for my balance or ask for my credit card purchases through chat and I get it back through the platform, through Facebook. That's not Facebook asking them for data. That's offering a service to users. Now, I could be wrong. I don't know the details here.
But
TechCrunch did a far more reasonable version.
No, TechCrunch just repeated the Facebook spokesperson's point of view. That's all TechCrunch did.
I have a little...
No. Facebook clearly wants to do this.
We know the disclosure. And by the way, nobody thinks that you are somehow magically influenced.
That's why I do disclosures, that I raise money for the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism from Facebook, but I receive no money from them and I'm independent of them.
And we also know that you have a bias toward Facebook because you like it. And you
have a bias toward technology.
Yeah. Well, I don't think this is anti-technology. I think...
Oh, yes,
there's
it
a
is.
Clear.
There's
a clear track record. Facebook has a clear track record.
Moral panic.
It's not moral panic. That's Facebook has a clear track record of invading our privacy. It's why I'm not on Facebook. It's a loathsome operation. And
meanwhile, the journalists who want to save you from all this, the journalists who exposed Cambridge Analytica, the journalists who are against all of this are begging Facebook for exceptions so they can make up fake accounts and get your data.
Right. So that's why I'm not on Facebook, because everybody wants to use...
But who's the bad guy in that? The journalists.
Facebook is also a participant.
Because Facebook's holding the rules. Facebook's saying no.
Okay, but that's mostly because they want to keep it to themselves.
Because
Facebook's real advantage is having all this information so they can use it for advertising.
Well, let's go back to the point that they're not going to use any banking data for advertising. They vowed that.
They didn't vow it.
All right.
Facebook spokesperson Elizabeth Diana tells TechCrunch it's not asking for credit card transaction data from banks.
They would get in such trouble if they did that.
They already get credit card transaction data. There are retailers who sell their credit card transaction data to Facebook. So they already have some.
To advertisers as well and media companies as well. I was at a company where we bought it.
But I will say that things like your bank balance being at Facebook is a little worrisome, because Facebook could turn around. People already use it for things like impacting and deciding your credit score. What happens if Facebook has this information, not for advertising, but just to give people a more complete picture of their user base?
Facebook already works with PayPal in 40 countries to let users get receipts via Messenger for their purchases. And I suppose it's possible that Facebook goes, no, I don't want to see that information.
Listen, Google gets all this now, and I'm very grateful, because I get, it's all in Gmail, and I get your trip to Buenos Aires, and Google figures it out, and they put the airline reservation, and they put the Uber rides.
So I stopped doing
that. The hotel all in there.
That's one of the reasons I don't use Gmail anymore. I use my own email service, but I do forward to TripIt any travel plans I want. In other words, I actively, instead of passively letting these companies scan my Gmail, I actively send forward, and you can do that with TripIt, forward the emails to them. And that's, I find, sufficiently convenient. I think it's not unreasonable. Now, the sad thing is, and the only reason we're fighting about this is because you get to choose what you want to do, Jeff, and I get to choose what I want to do. But the vast majority of Facebook users are unaware of whatever the consequences are. And so they need to be protected. I think they need to be protected against Facebook's overweening desire for their personal information. But they're not going to be, because...
And Google, yes, they sell advertising, but Google in many ways uses data to make better products. Facebook uses data to sell you at a higher rate to advertisers. So, I mean, there's a slight difference
trust. You get something from Facebook, and obviously the reason people are on Facebook is they consider it, because I think most people now understand that there is a leakage of personal information. There's been enough attention placed that they're willing to do that, though, because They don't want to leave Facebook. That's where all their family and friends are, and that's how they
stay
in touch.
Well, the difference is that I'm sharing things publicly on Facebook.
You're getting something of value. I think Stephanie... Oh, there she is. I thought Stacey just fainted.
No.
She walked off the show.
She said, that's it. Facebook's statement today, according to John Constein, right in TechCrunch, shows more scruples than Google, which last year struck ad measurement data deals with data brokers that have access to 70% of credit and debit card transactions in the U.S. That led to a formal complaint from the FTC. Correction! Google tells us...
To the FTC from Epic. Big difference.
Right. Oh, from Epic.
Epic complains about everything.
Epic complains about everything. The Electronic Privacy Information Center. Correction. Google tells us that deals are for ad measurement data, not ad targeting, as we originally published. So, I guess ultimately because of the warring stories here, you believe what you want to believe, or what evidence has led you to believe. And I believe fully that Facebook would love this information. I also believe that banks, like a lot of companies, are saying, well, that's a value to us. What are you going to give us? We're not just going to give up the information. But I think if they were given something of value, they probably would. There are privacy restrictions on what banks can tell people about, I would presume, about my account. Maybe not. I don't know. We're kind of screwed when it comes to privacy one way or the other. I mean, I can quit Facebook and stop using Gmail. It's not going to particularly make a difference in how much these companies know about me. Not that I care. I got nothing to hide, but I still think they should be. I think they need to be held a little bit accountable, don't you? Come on, you got to admit that.
Why don't you go to an Alex Jones rant about it?
No, I'm not going that far. I think I'm being very reasonable, Jeff.
I was trying to say that.
I'm being very reasonable. I don't think that's unreasonable to say this is Facebook's business model. And Mark Zuckerberg has a long and tragic history of moving fast and breaking things and then apologizing later. Come on. That's their business model. They never even deny it. In fact, somebody was telling me we had some kids in here who had just gone to Facebook, and they were talking to a Facebook guy. He said, yeah, so now we're our motto is move fast and break a few less things. Even internally, they're saying that. It's fewer things, by the way.
So we got to do
June Oven
InfoWars story.
Which one?
InfoWars story.
Well, that's right. We did that before the show started.
Yeah, we haven't done that yet.
Censorship. Alex Jones, InfoWars. First of all, I became first aware of InfoWars when a lot of our audience members mentioned it as a fun thing to read. They really thought of it as entertainment. Now, this is probably 8 years ago.
That's how people in Austin. So this is, he's from Austin. And we always, like, there used to be signs around cafes and stuff, and we would just giggle. It was a joke.
Yeah, InfoWars itself tells you kind of, the name of the site kind of tells you, It was always a little bit of a conspiracy theory kind of nutty site.
Howard Stern argued it was Weekly World News. It was aliens coming down.
And even in his divorce proceedings, Alex Jones said, I play a character. I mean, it's pretty patently a character. However, some of the stuff he said has been so scurrilous and damaging. In particular, the horrific things he said about the parents of children murdered in Sandy Hook.
Wait. I'm not even going to let you finish. I'm going to pull a Kanye. What's so damaging is that we have someone in power who either A, doesn't actually recognize that this guy's just a kook playing a part and has legitimized him. That's what's so freaking scary.
Can I see if you agree with this, slightly change the slant of that. It's the same roughly. But this comes from Cory Doctorow, who wrote a great piece, something called about Mark Zuckerberg's oily rag fire, in which he said something I thought was quite astute, which was that in 2016, what really happened was very targeted advertising, mostly on Facebook, but some other places, empowered a slimy underbelly of the American people to let their true feelings of racism and out and in fact got them to vote, something that they hadn't done ever in years, if ever. And as a result, galvanized this what is it, 30%, 20%, 10%? I don't know. But enough people, especially given the apathy and the lack of voting from everybody else, that got somebody in power that supported this point of view. And if that hadn't happened, if this slimy underbelly hadn't been empowered, then what Alex Jones says and does would be Weekly World News. It'd be a sideshow. But the problem is not so much that Alex Jones exists, but that the people who believe Alex Jones and QAnon and all this bogosity now suddenly are active and feel empowered and are acting on it. And you have Charlottesville, and we're going to have on the anniversary of Charlottesville something possibly worse in D.C. Soon, that those people have been empowered by all this. And that's what's I don't think it's the man in the White House. I think it's that he's empowered by these people, and these people have somehow been activated. Somebody added some water and dehydrated them, and they voted, and they're active, and they're marching around with Nazi flags and tiki torches. It's vile, it's repulsive, but I don't think you blame Alex Jones for it. I think he's always been there.
He's got a light on. There's no water they threw on. It was gasoline, and he's got a match.
But he's always always been there.
Yeah, that's true. And the other factor here is media is that we were manipulated and amplified this. We were used. Facebook was used. Twitter is used. And it's the weakness in democracy that we believe in openness and information. And it's a weakness to play that the Russians played and the trolls played the same.
Well, God bless it. I'm glad we live in an open country. I'm glad that there's the First Amendment. I'm glad that there's free speech. I think that the antidote to this gas fire, this dumpster fire, is for the vast majority of right-minded, open-minded citizens to step forward and get off their butts and start voting start participating, I'd be wary of the desire to censor.
But censorship is what government does. Editing and choosing is what both, what platforms and publishers and bar owners do. Get out of my bar. You're not welcome here.
Well, what if it weren't Alex Jones? What if it were 4chan? Because Alex Jones is basically 4chan. QAnon is a 4chan. Is a 4chan.
Well, but 4chan isn't on Facebook.
Right, but what if somebody came along and said, let's shut down 4chan?
Well, no, that's different. That's different.
The
internet is open. There are dark corners of the internet where Alex Jones can find his cockroaches and convene. Nobody's shutting that down. Nobody's stopping his speech. Mark Zuckerberg is not responsible for free speech. He does not run the internet. He has a choice and a responsibility to decide proper behavior on his platform, as does Jack Dorsey. Which leads us to the real question. I'm curious, Stacey, what's your view? Did Facebook and Apple and Spotify and YouTube do the right thing in going ahead and killing eventually Alex Jones and InfoWars sites? And what do you think Jack Dorsey and Twitter should do?
And Google, by the way, because Google Plus still apparently carries
Alex
Jones
content. Yes,
that's true. So Twitter and Google Plus are the two who have not yet done anything about that.
So
Stacey, what's your thought?
I think pulling the podcast is fine. Alex Jones has his app. Making it easier to find that sort of thing is fine. And they're apparently really excited and people downloaded it, and that's good. You can have a website. As for Twitter banning him, he does clearly violate, or he has in the past violated, their terms of service. So
they say he hasn't, though, Stacey. This is the
That's
debate.
Easily proven. We need to go back and find tweets where he attacks somebody, or he says he calls for violence, or does some of the things that Twitter says are not okay. And if you can go back and find those, then you send those to Jack Dorsey, and you say, look.
Let's say he didn't, but he's still doing bilious and horrible things.
He can be bilious and horrible on Twitter.
He can be.
He can.
Everybody else is.
He can market his.
Well, here's a different question. If Harvey Weinstein had a Twitter account, given everything he's done, none of which he did on any platform, is it within the rights of Facebook and Twitter to kill Harvey Weinstein's account because they won't be associated with him?
No.
No, okay.
I don't think so. I think as a business, putting InfoWars on Facebook. Facebook has the right to take it down if they want to. Twitter has the right to take it down if they want to. I think Facebook not taking it down, or sorry, Facebook taking it down says something about Facebook that many people want it, you know, that are happy about. Same thing with Twitter. I think Apple deciding to say, you know what, we're not going to act as a distribution platform for your podcast. Fine. As long as he's still got a space on the internet, a company should be able to say, yeah, get out of my bar, basically.
I agree. I agree. Would be wrong, however, for Google to censor search results.
Yes.
Well, they're forced to do it by the EU. Okay.
And this is interesting because remember when Matthew Prince of Cloudflare talked about...
This is a challenging one, yeah.
Yeah, he talked about removing his...
The Daily Stormer website was using Cloudflare for DDoS protection. Initially, Matthew Prince said, we're not going to do anything about that. We're an open platform, and we don't want to get in the business of deciding which content we should protect. After considerable comment, including, by the way, and to be perfectly blunt, they were an advertiser at the time, and we decided to decline their advertising as a result, which I have really... It was a very difficult decision for me.
Yeah.
The day we decided not to do that, coincidentally, he said, all right, we're going to block him. I completely understood Matthew Prince's point of view and did not, and as I'm arguing here, did not disagree with it. Mm-hmm. But we decided not to do the advertising mostly because I felt like that would be counterproductive for everybody. It would be counterproductive for Cloudflare because it would just stimulate a big battle over this, and it would be counterproductive for us. We'd be caught in the crossfire. Since, by the way, we brought them back. We said, yes, we'll be glad to take your advertising now. But it was not, in both cases, it was neither a condemnation nor an endorsement of his decision. I kind of understood his decision both directions, but just not thinking that doing the advertising at that point would be not good for anybody. So I said, no, we're not going to take your money here because you don't want to run an ad now and I don't want to do it. So I should probably not even have mentioned that, but in interest of clarity, I will.
So Stacey, Leo,
that's a challenging thing. I don't know what I would do in Matthew Prince's point of position.
So let me throw another thing out here. So Jack said something about, we don't want to succumb to outside pressure. And I wrote a piece the other day saying that no, what's really happening here, I think, is that society is negotiating its norms. And the platforms would love us to do that with a rule set. Here's the rule to follow.
Yeah,
but no,
they could,
we're going to do that anecdotally.
They could pass it off and say, we'll just do what you say.
Right, so we're going to do that instead anecdotally. And what society is saying, what a large portion of society is saying is, if you have a rule set that leaves InfoWars in with all their bilious behavior, then it's a bad rule set. No, InfoWars is over the line. You figure out what the line is, people, but get rid of it. And so, yes, there was outside pressure, but I think that it actually was the system beginning to work. It was society saying, we're going to identify a line. We're going to identify InfoWars is on the wrong side of it. Now, we'll figure out the rest later. But we think it's a bad thing. We think you shouldn't stand up and distribute it. And so it was democracy. It was the market working in a way.
So that happened with pornography. But still, there are purveyors of porn, much to many people's chagrin at a certain point in time. So you could be saying that in that line may have been drawn and Twitter may be like, you know what? I'm OK distributing. It's the equivalent of being I'm OK with distributing porn. So, I mean, again, I think it's a legit stance to take. I may not like it, but it's their right and they can do it.
There is an argument that you want to be careful about banning stuff because it's unpopular or because somebody doesn't like it.
But this feels moral.
So,
feels moral to you, but maybe to Alex Jones, it doesn't. I mean, I don't want to be the sit on the high throne of moral judgment.
I think inciting the harassment of the parents of murdered children, no matter how you cut it,
it's pretty reprehensible.
Yeah. Yeah. And you are the company you keep. And at some level, as I say, the problem is that Zuckerberg thought he was responsible for free speech. And that's only if he runs the whole internet, which maybe he wants to do in some countries and does. But that's not his job.
And even in the United States, in many cases, Facebook is what people do on the internet. I mean, mm-hmm. he's rapidly getting that moral responsibility, but whether he wants it.
The Economist had a piece today that almost said, you know, treat them as government. In that case, you'd be requiring
right.
Facebook to distribute InfoWars. That's right. not a world I want either.
It's a very challenging.
It's all that's the ultimate lesson here. Is I think that there's this kind of presumption that these are easy decisions, and why the hell didn't they do them before? These are hard decisions. They have many implications. There are hidden dangers here.
Yeah,
well, I think they did the right thing. There are also a wide variety of opinions and users, and I don't think this is not a black and white thing. We love black and white. Computers love black and white.
Yeah.
You know, computer purveyors and systems online love it because you can make it work. But really, this is stuff you should be having conversations about.
Exactly.
And, I thought I'd ask Stacy about this. So there's two FCC stories in the hopper. One, the FCC, Ajit Pai is blaming his Obama-appointed CIO for his story that the FCC comment site was hacked when instead it was DDoSed, as the investigative report has proven, DDoSed by a lot of Americans commenting that they wanted to preserve net neutrality. Ajit Pai said, hey, I said it was hacked, but that wasn't my fault. It was that Obama guy told me that. Mm-hmm. Okay, on that, that's patently bogus.
False. Ajit Pai. So there's a couple things.
Okay. Here's the other story. The FCC has now sided with Google Fiber over Comcast on One Touch Make Ready, which you're going to have to explain, but it basically opens the polls, right, to third-party internet service providers, the utility polls. So that's good. So which is it?
Yeah, and stopping Sinclair was good. Killing net neutrality was bad.
Which is it?
Yeah. I didn't see the R story. Hold on. I've got to go see.
So One Touch Make Ready is a rule that lets companies attach wires to utility poles without waiting for the other users of the pole to move their own wires. Google Fiber says the utilities have been dragging their heels, and that's what killed Google Fiber because they couldn't get up on the poles. Comcast and AT&T wouldn't make their poles ready. One Touch Make Ready says, hey, you can do the adjustments yourself, Fiber. Comcast said, don't do it, man. The FCC, stop, man. That's terrible.
So this
Ajit Pai rejected the argument, saying that startups are unnecessarily delayed when they have to wait for incumbent ISPs before hanging wires. This is one of a couple of, I think, interesting Pai decisions pro-competition.
Yeah, and this is something that Wheeler actually implemented or started.
Right.
They started this way back in the day, and it was a legitimate issue. In Austin, AT&T was just dragging their feet forever.
Could have something to do with 5G, too, because 5G might require some of this deployment. So,
yeah, but it also will help because, and this again takes some power. Not all poles are actually owned by
utilities. Well, interestingly,
some of them are owned by municipalities, and this takes away some of the state's ability to say to ISPs, they can put restrictions on things. So
Verizon supports this One Touch Make Ready because that will help them implement 5G.
Oh, 5G, okay, of course. Right.
So what I'm looking for is a thread. I'm just looking for a consistent point of view from Ajit Pai. And maybe it's just I'll do whatever Verizon tells me to do. Maybe that's the consistent point of view. I don't know.
Mm. It takes away power from the states.
Right.
It does help, but it puts power in the hands of people who actually own that good. I mean, it's overall a positive thing. And sometimes a stop clock can be right, twice a day.
And maybe Ajit Pai isn't 100% evil. I don't know. I mean,
he's not. I mean, he's
a human. We think. We're not sure.
He is human, and he is in a crappy spot. I mean, imagine having the entire internet or most of the internet hating you.
Hate you.
I mean, the lobbyists at Comcast and AT&T, you know, they're used to that. They get paid really good money. I don't think AgiPi does. Not yet, anyway.
Not yet. Yeah, that's the right thing, Stacey.
Amazon has launched grocery pickup at Whole Foods for Prime members. Get on in there.
Rose, what does that mean? They pack it for you and you pick it up?
Yeah.
You order it and they pack it. It's nice. Actually a really handy service.
Have you used it?
I have not used the Amazon one. I've used HEB, my groceries. This is not a weird service.
So this isn't delivery. This is you call them ahead or go online and you order. And then they have it ready for you and you just go get it.
Yeah. You basically, like, if you can do your grocery shopping on your lunch hour at your computer and then pick it up on the way home.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's actually quite convenient. Yes.
And then the information says that they have information that people are not using their Amazon Echoes or other voice-enabled device to buy things. In fact, only 2% of people with devices that use Amazon Echo have made a purchase so far this year. This is according to two people briefed on the company's internal figures. Now, 2% of 50 million is still not a bad number.
I bought stuff on it.
I buy stuff with it all the time. I find it insanely convenient. But they make point. Yeah. They make a point that you're not going to buy a stereo system, or, you know, you're only going to buy commodities or something you don't have to try.
I can't even reorder my dog treats on that thing. It is so bad.
I buy batteries. The reason I use it is because I'm in the bathroom. I'm out of toothpaste. They'll say, Echo, buy some toothpaste. And I'll say, well, the last thing you bought was this. We want me to buy some more. And I say, yes. They say, what's your number? I say my number, and that's it.
And you it have comes. An echo in yeah, the bath- mine, wait, wait, wait. You have an echo in the like bathroom? That.
Of course I do. Actually, my real problem is the echo in the bathroom is too close to the echo in the closet and the echo in the bedroom. So I have to give them different names, because if I say echo or the other word, they all go, what? And sometimes the wrong one picks it up. Huh?
The ESP doesn't work for you?
Not at all. It's supposed to know which one you're closest to.
Yeah, it is.
The worst thing that happens is I'll say, and it's happened today, and this is why I'm familiar with it. I say, Echo, I say, Echo, listen to First Up podcast, because I like the NPR First Up podcast. When I'm getting dressed, I listen to the news. And unfortunately, I'm in the bathroom, but the bedroom one starts playing First Up. So I say, Echo, stop. The one in the bathroom stops. And then I say, Echo, listen to the daily on the bathroom Sonos. And then I have two news shows going at the same time.
Out of sync.
Out of sync. No, it's two different shows. So, yes.
Two different shows. Yes. Yeah.
It's every once in a while, they both talk about the same story. So I feel like the left ear and the right ear are at least, it's very bad. So, yeah, is that what they call it? ESP?
I think they call it ESP.
Echo sensing.
Extra
proximity.
What is it? Hold on.
No, don't look it up. I don't care. Anyway,
extra stolen privacy.
Yeah, extra stolen privacy. I like it.
Echo spatial perception.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Ooh.
So do you think this is a big deal? The information got a lot of press over this, that so few people have bought things?
You know, I don't know, because there is consistent, like, when the Echo came out, everyone was like, oh, this is to help Amazon boost commerce. And people talked about people with Echoes tending to buy more and spend more on Amazon. It didn't actually say that they did it over their Echoes. And I think it's a very shallow way of looking at the platform.
Yeah, I agree.
It's just to be like, right. So
it was
that's just
bad point. Expectations.
And, you know, I mean, of course, Amazon would love it if you bought more stuff with your Echo, but it's just part of a whole ecosystem. And I am all in on Prime. You are all in on Prime. You are all in on Prime. And you and you and you. I mean, clearly it's working. As long as you're buying it from Amazon, do they care how you ask for it? I don't think.
What I thought was actually a way more interesting story was the one I think that came out today, or maybe it was yesterday, about stolen GoPros and how people fencing stolen merchandise lower the cost of that, like Amazon's price matching algorithms lower their prices and other merchants lower their prices, and it really frustrates the manufacturers.
So thieves go on Amazon selling stolen GoPros for a really low price because they stole them.
It fell off a truck.
And unfortunately, it hurts doubly because not only is the thief selling a stolen GoPro, but GoPro now gets lower prices because of Amazon's pricing algorithms.
Ooh. And that's kind of an interesting, that's one of those cases where, you know, the algorithm is behaving in a way that, you know, probably shouldn't. And does Amazon really have a care? It doesn't really, it's like an externality for Amazon, right? Yeah. So
I think the Amazon's a little too algorithmic sometimes on its pricing. We've seen weird side effects.
When people point things out where Amazon's algorithms don't work so well, Amazon has reacted. Remember that Business Week story when they talked about like people not having access to Prime, I think it was, in poorer areas of Boston?
Oh, I know. Terrible. Yeah.
So, okay.
Nice. Okay. I love this. Samsung accidentally publishes the official Galaxy Note 9 video, which they accidentally have done right before the release of every phone for the last 4 years. Accidentally.
But it makes tech bloggers happy.
I'm not going to repeat that story. Let's see. There it is. But we're not going to repeat it. We're not going to repeat it. I think we could just take a break now and go to your picks, right? Is there anything? I'll give you guys a chance.
From here, if there's anything else.
I would love to leave because I was planning on being done by 4 o'clock, but we are not.
Here we go. Quickly. Okay. One ad and then you'll get your pick and you can go. I'm so sorry, Stacey.
No.
We started late, I apologize.
We started late. Well, that's, I'm like.
Oh. That's on me. That's all on me. I was watching TV. Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Actually, this is good for people who like to go quick. Rocket Mortgage is the entirely online mortgage approval process that, unlike my last experience buying a house, doesn't take months to get a home loan. It takes minutes. I love Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans, the best lender in the country, number one in customer satisfaction, year after year, 8 years in a row, according to J.D. Power. Number one. They're also number one in volume, and I think those go hand in hand, right? They took over at the end of last year from the big bank, who took months to get me my home loan. And you better believe it, the next time I buy a house, rocketmortgage.com/twig. They've also done something to reduce the anxiety of buying a house, the most expensive thing you're ever going to buy. It's a big deal, too. You want to buy the right house. You want to buy a house that you and your family will love for the years you're going to be living in it. So you don't want to be rushed or pressured. That's why Quicken Loans has created the power buying process. So it starts going to rocketmortgage.com/twig. You don't have to fill out a long application. You answer a couple of questions. They can get information, the information they need on income and assets and credit just from the trusted financial institutions that they work with, as long as you give it your permission. Within a few minutes, they're going to give you what they call qualified approval. Within 24 hours, they'll give you verified approval. Now, the verified approval is really cool because that's basically makes you a cash buyer. With your verified approval letter, when you make an offer on a house, the seller says, oh, no contingency, you're good for the money. It's like you got cash. You go right to the head of the line. So that's very important. But once you're verified, you also qualify for their all-new exclusive Rate Shield approval. This is really a nice way to reduce the anxiety. And this is a relatively new thing. For the last few years, interest rates have been flat. They're starting to go up. And even 0.25% more, and you're going to pay tens of thousands of dollars more over the life of the loan. So that's pressure to buy now before the rates go up some more. And we don't want that. We want to make it easy. We want you to have the time to look at the houses and find the right one for you, not just buy it because you got to right now. They lock up your rate for up to 90 days, up to 3 months, so you can go house hunting and not worry about rates. They can't go up. They can't go up. If rates go up, it doesn't matter. Your rate stays the same. If rates go down, your rate will go down, but it can't go up. Either way, you win. It's exactly what you'd expect from the best mortgage lender in the country. RocketMortgage.com/twig. Take the stress out of buying a house. Make it a pleasant experience. It's fun to look for your new home. It is, as long as you don't have that stress. And Rocket Mortgage just takes the stress out of the equation. Now, here's some legalese I got to read. Don't get stressed. Rate Shield approval is only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states. And MLSConsumerAccess.org number 3030. But really, all you have to worry about, all you have to remember, rocketmortgage.com/twig. Honestly, the way to buy your next house. rocketmortgage.com/twig. Oh, they do refis too. Thank you, Quicken Loans, for making Twig possible. Stacy, let's get your thing out of the way, the June oven.
Yes, this is the second generation June. I don't have it with me in Seattle to show you.
Did you buy it?
No. I have the first generation. So this, the pricing here is really worth talking about. So it is a very similar oven. We'll talk about what's different. It is right now, you can buy it for $100 off, so it's $499.
Whoa.
Or you can buy the quote-unquote gourmet package, which is $699.
Did I blow it by buying the really expensive one?
I'm going to tell you, and you can decide.
Okay. Because it's your fault. Okay.
Comes with extra warranty and the recipes app and a bunch of trays.
Okay.
How much does that cost? How much does the gourmet one cost?
$100 more.
$699. $200 more.
Better be some nice trays.
There's a bunch of them. So what do we think? Did you blow it? Well, the new one is different.
It doesn't smaller?
It's the same size. Okay. It doesn't have the scales and the feet.
Oh, I like the scales and the feet because then it knows how
it
much
you're... It doesn't actually do that.
Oh.
So this is what I learned. So it has, and they also did away with the knob, which had some extra sensors and is extra super fancy because most people just touch it. So
yeah, nobody uses the knob. Yeah.
I use the knob.
But I do too, but I can understand why you wouldn't need a knob.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's one of the ways they cut it. They also have more volume. They also have more experience.
Yeah.
So they've changed their manufacturing process. So I talked to Matt Van Horn, and he'll be on the podcast tomorrow if you are a June aficionado.
As I am. I love my
June. As one might be.
Yeah.
And I would say what they did, Leo, you and I helped make this oven possible. Basically, they looked at all the data from the existing customers, and they said, you know what? Here's what people need. Here's what they don't. And they kept the stuff like the fast heating, so the carbon fiber heating elements. They kept the camera. They kept all of that. They kept the local control. And, you know, I would buy this oven again in a heartbeat.
It kind of makes sense. This is an example of a feedback loop that modern technology allows. Because, you know, if you buy a normal toaster oven, Hamilton Beach knows nothing about how you use it. But June knows everything about how you use it. So that they can improve it. That makes sense.
This does a lot of things. It does the air frying. You know, you can use it as a crock pot.
Wait a minute. I can use it as an air fryer?
You can use yours as an air fryer.
I didn't know that.
It's just a software. Yeah, so you do have to buy a $50 air fryer tray.
Oh.
But yeah, I've used mine as an air fryer for chicken.
We're about to buy an air fryer.
Don't do that. Your June doesn't.
My June doesn't.
So, yeah.
Thank you, Stacy. Leo should say thank you, Stacy.
Thank you, Stacy. Look at all the baskets. I didn't know all this stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, I can get the June Air baskets.
They're actually real. Like, I have them. They're very handy.
I bought a big fancy dehydrator.
Oh, no. Yeah, you can get rid of your dehydrator, too.
No, I know. I'm not. I just bought it.
Oh. Okay. Sell it on eBay.
Yeah, I like my dehydrator. I could do a lot more in that because it's huge.
Oh, well, there you go. Keep your dehydrator and your June.
And I don't need a new crumb tray or wire shelf or June pan. Thermometer's good. So all I really need is these.
So, Stacy, two questions. Is there anything that this one has that your expensive one doesn't have?
Oh.
A. And then B, is there anything that if you had this one alone, you would miss that the expensive one has?
I would miss the knob on the expensive one. But I would totally be fine, and I would totally pay less if I could.
Yeah, this is less than half the original June oven.
So I have a lot of my friends, actually, they emailed me, and they're like, is this real? Is this the same? And I was like, yeah, it's almost exactly the same with the exception of those two things, mostly.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have anything that would change the cooking experience. In fact, over time, when I bought it, they've added many new programs, so it's actually gotten better for me over time, right. And this comes with all that automatically. So I'm like, it's a no-brainer, guys. If this is now in your price point, go buy it.
Toaster ovens are really useful in the kitchen. This is a very smart internet-connected toaster oven. It has an app, has a camera, has a thermo probe, and all of that stuff. So,
and it has the preset recipes, which I cannot over...
Do you use those a lot?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. We always use them. I mean,
What's your favorite?
The salmon turns out really nice each time. And the chicken. Actually, the chicken breasts turned out really nice.
I keep cooking the salmon in the oven. I should try it in the June.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
I will.
What do you do to the chicken?
I can just put the chicken breasts in there. I mean, I'll season it. Yeah, just but if I just want to have like chicken breasts handy to throw in bowls or some weird thing later on in the week, I just spice them up and then pop them in.
And they use the probe, right? The thermometer.
Yeah.
So that way they're cooked perfectly. They're juicy, but they're fully cooked, all of that. That's nice.
Yeah.
Okay. You convinced me.
But you don't need to buy this one because you already have yours.
Well, might as well.
No.
I'm just teasing. I'm not going to buy it. I like
See, Leo, you have to buy a second house, not to live in, but just to have the more gadgets.
Yeah. That's why I use Rocket Mortgage. thank you, Stacy. Go. It's wonderful to have you. Stacy's the host of Stacy on IoT. Go to stacyonIoT.com and subscribe to her free newsletter. Keep on what's going on in the world of Internet of Things, all sorts of cool stuff at Giga Stacy. And you are.
Oh, we forgot. Oh. Okay. I shouldn't have talked about the June. I should have told you, just go check out the Anki Vector. That should be my other thing.
The what?
Sorry. The Anki Vector. It just launched today. It is amazing.
Well, A-N-K-I. I have the Anki, original Anki racetrack. Oh, it's a robot. Oh.
It's the Cosmo, but it's smarter.
Yeah, they killed what was the other one? The Orby? They killed that one. Oh, it's cute. It is a Cosmo. It's the same size as a Cosmo.
Yeah.
But does it do more stuff?
It does, and it does it locally. So the Cosmo borrowed the processing power from your phone. This does more stuff, and it does it on the robot.
But they didn't do the original Cosmo.
Yeah, they did.
They did the Cosmo. Okay. So it's got those cute little eyes and stuff. And you can get one for $199 at Kickstarter. Did you get one? Do you have it?
Kevin got that one. I still like the Cosmo. I don't.
We have a Cosmo around. You're looking into the office because we reviewed it. Those are the cute little eyes. Yeah, I like the color better than white. I think it looks more utilitarian.
I think it looks mean.
Yes.
And Kevin says I don't like it.
Robots should look mean.
Robot. No.
They should look mean. Don't be fooled by the cute friendly. They're not.
Cosmo is cute. Okay.
Fortunately,
off I go.
He's too small to be a real threat. Thank you.
I don't know. He can whack you with that little bulldozer thing on the finger.
He's a little bulldozer on it. Can he move sand?
He moves those little cubes.
He doesn't do anything useful.
He can pick up a cube. Now he can actually. Now he can answer questions, and I think he can actually. You can send him to go look out the window, and he can recognize things. You can actually program him with Python. You can use TensorFlow.
You can torture a cat.
You could torture a cat.
You can fist bump it.
Yeah.
This guy is the tech director of AI. He looks like he's 8. Okay, 12. Brad Newman. He looks like he's just a kid. Look at him. Fresh-faced Brad Newman, director of artificial intelligence. And in fact, I think he's in his kindergarten classroom right now.
You should be worried not about being replaced by the robot, but by him.
I'm worried about Brad. Forget the robot. Yeah. Thank you, Stacy. Bye. Enjoy some queso when you get home.
Oh, I was like, what?
Because there's no queso in Seattle. Bye.
Bye.
Bye, Higginbotham. You're not related to Daniel Higginbotham, author of Closure for the Brave and True, are you? We'll never know. And now, ladies and gentlemen, Jeff Jarvis.
Second to get out of here.
Yeah, she wasted no time. Our pick of the week.
Let's see, which one should I do?
Number of the week.
Well, so we have, the number is one, because we have children. Now, a story from the Associated Press about how their first words are...
Oh, my God. No.
And...
no.
Well, actually, kind of a decent story talking about how kids are interacting with these... Four at once responded to me. But how kids are interacting with these devices and what the impact of that is. And it's not a full... I was going to scream about moral panic, but it's actually not a bad story. Saying that they can get answers to things and they can watch neat things and they can ask questions and that maybe it's not such an awful thing.
Wow.
So a parent tells a story that of course, kids say goo goo. So when the mother said, the kid said, okay, Google, the father said, no, 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 kids say goo. And no, no, it was hearing us say all the time, okay, you know who, and it was mimicking us.
It was easy anyway, because they do say goo.
They do say goo, right, so it's goo goo, right. Okay, goo goo.
Okay, goo goo. It did?
Yeah, it did.
There's a whole bunch of stuff on Reddit about other words you can use to trigger your devices.
Right.
And what words people are using, because it's fun to use something besides, you know, the usual.
If people complain about that. I see those complaints. That's a dumb trigger.
Oh, that's so bad. I do wish you could change triggers. That will come, yeah. I guess. That's really interesting. So, first words, okay, goo-goo. Well, I think we can wrap it. I'm not going to take any more of your time. We got two picks from Stacy, so that kind of feels like
we've... And it's your weekend. Damn it.
We've done our job. Well, I'm never in a hurry to get out of this show. I love doing it. It's
same
a lot
here.
Of fun. And besides, I got to go buy a Magic Leap headset. I got
No. Don't do it. Stop yourself.
No. Stop. I wish I did have that ability to just say, no, you're not going to. But I, you know, what happens is I say it, and then I go, I think about it for days.
So what's killing me is I know we're going to have a new phone.
Yeah, it's going to be expensive.
And we're going to have maybe a new Pixel Book.
Yep, yep.
And maybe a Pixel brand watch.
You got nothing. You got nothing. I have to buy everything. You just buy the Google stuff. You got no reason to complain.
No.
By the way, this just in, MailChimp has now dumped Alex Jones.
Yes. Next.
Wow.
He's off of Friendster.
It's one thing to be thrown off of Facebook, but when MailChimp says you can't use our service, man, that's bad. Thank you, Jeff Jarvis. You'll find him at the City University of New York. When's the semester begin? Soon?
Next week. I brainwash the new students all next week. Gutenberg time.
Gutenberg time. Those are some damn lucky kids. Are a lot of them straight out of college or in the graduate program, or a lot of them re-entry?
Like 27.
Yeah, so most of them have had jobs, and now they're...
A lot have had jobs, career shifters. Some are right out of college. It's quite a great mix. We have a huge class. Our enrollment's way up, and that's good.
That's fantastic.
At the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism at the City University of New York.
Beautiful. It's a beautiful thing.
It is a beautiful thing, indeed.
And thank Craig for, I'm sure you have, for endowing that chair. It's a good thing. He's Craig of Craig's List. He's taken the money, ill-gotten gain from putting newspapers out of business and funded journalism. How confusing is that?
All that money he left in the pockets of consumers.
Yeah, you're right. We do This Week in Google every Wednesday, 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern, 20:30 UTC. You could watch live if you want at twit.tv/live. We stream audio and video. There's four or five streams you can choose from and pick the one you like. And if you do watch it live, you should chat live, because that's just a bunch of people just like you at irc.twit.tv, and we're all talking about the same thing. Never. But it's still fun. irc.twit.tv. And if, incidentally, you would like to download on-demand versions of the show, you can also do that at twit.tv/twig or subscribe in your favorite podcatcher. Thanks for joining us. And we'll see you next Wednesday on This Week in Google. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye,
Google.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye, Google.